I've noticed a number of peculiar incidents among the members of the student body, all having to do with rock and roll music.
Wham bam, Benjamin!
Now, if you don't think this song is the greatest song ever, I will fight you.
From Paul McCartney to Beyoncé, plenty of band members have felt the need to spread their wings and fly alone. And sometimes it works. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. Stay tuned as we share some of our favorite solo efforts. Plus, we review the latest album from rock veterans Modest Mouse. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, it might seem like only yesterday to us, but it was actually 2004 that Modest Mouse, this indie rock band that had already been going then a decade in the Pacific Northwest, broke huge with that song Float On. You remember Float On?
I do, and as you said, 10 years. We're going to review the new album from Modest Mouse later on in the show, Jim, but first we've got some music news. That is Percy Sledge with a 2010 performance of his best-known song, When a Man Loves a Woman. That was a nationally televised performance, one of the last performances, at least nationally known performances, of that song from Percy Sledge. He died in Louisiana at the age of 74 a few days ago. You know, started out in Alabama picking cotton, working at a hospital. The story goes that one of the patients at the hospital heard Sledge singing in the hallway and said, "You got to record some music."
Wow.
And Sledge went into a studio and apparently improvised the lyrics for this song that he'd been working on, which would become When a Man Loves a Woman. There's a long sort of tangled history about that song in terms of the recording. He apparently gave the songwriting credits to some musicians that he was working with, but claims that he actually wrote the song. Nonetheless, that song has become totally associated with Percy Sledge. It has been covered numerous times since he recorded it during that era. It was slaughtered by Michael Bolton in the early 90s, but Michael Bolton did Percy Sledge a good turn because it did sort of revive his career. He was able to get back into the recording studio, do some more recording, do some more touring. Percy Sledge was still active as a artist almost until the time of his death a few days ago. But I want to go back to that era in the 60s when he recorded When a Man Loves a Woman. He did a number of fine recordings that aren't as nearly well known at that Muscle Shoals studio in Alabama. We've talked a lot about that recording scene over the last few years, and Sledge was one of the great artists who worked in those studios during this era when they were coming up with R&B hit after R&B hit. He recorded with the best-known R&B label of the time, Atlantic Records, and some of his lesser-known cuts like Warm and Tender Love, Take Time to Know Her, Cover Me, are prized by soul aficionados. I want to play one of the more obscure tracks from that era that I think is nearly as good as When a Man Loves a Woman. It's called It Tears Me Up from 1966, the same year he recorded When a Man Loves a Woman, from Percy Sledge on Sound Opinions.
I see you walk with me. I see you talk. See your knees, speak.
It Tears Me Up by Percy Sledge, in honor of that great artist, dead at the age of 74. That's the one and only Ringo Starr with one of his solo hits, Greg, It Don't Come Easy. Nothing's ever come easy to Ringo, and he's pretty amazed that he is being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a solo artist. Ringo is always self-effacing.
I'm warning you with peace and love, but I have too much to do.
I have defended Ringo Starr as a great drummer many times on this show. Understated, always playing exactly what was needed for the song. Can't much defend Ringo as a songwriter or as a singer. He got by with a little help from his friends, sending him good songs. George Harrison, you know, Photograph, right? But as a solo artist, Ringo, apparently there was a little bit of backroom dealing for this to happen. McCartney, his former bandmate in the Beatles, just gave an interview to Rolling Stone where he said he was reminded that Ringo wasn't in the Hall of Fame as a solo artist, only as a Beatle. So he got some help from Bruce Springsteen and Dave Grohl, and all three of them petitioned the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, said Ringo needs to be in as a solo artist. The Hall of Fame was quick to point out people can petition, yes, for their favorites, but it's the critics and industry people who vote on those who are eligible to get into the Hall of Fame who decide the final choices. However, Ringo didn't get voted on. He's being slid into the Hall of Fame as a Musical Excellence Award. There's only been four of those in Hall of Fame history. While what Ringo did with the Beatles will live forever, I don't think anybody's all that excited about Ringo's solo career. In fact, the solo album before last, Greg, Ringo 2012, sold fewer than 20,000 copies. Now it's time to talk about some more successful solo careers, successful both artistically and commercially.
Baby, I'm amazed the way you love me all the time. Maybe I'm afraid of the way I love you. Baby, I'm amazed the way you pulled me out of time. You hung me on the line. Maybe I'm amazed the way I really need you.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that is Paul McCartney with Maybe I'm Amazed. Ties in very nicely with our theme today, Jim. April 1970, 45 years ago this month, McCartney released that song, released his debut album as a solo artist. I mean, he was only in the biggest group of all time, the Beatles.
Right.
And here's how he tells the world about, by the way, I'm going to make this solo record. Press release, Q&A. Oh, by the way, the Beatles are breaking up. I'm doing a solo record. Pretty amazing series of events. Comes out with his self-titled solo record that month. Comes out with this debut single that month. And the Beatles are gone. Talk about a solo debut splash.
Yeah, it doesn't get much bigger than that, Greg. But lots of people over the course of rock history have made a lot of news by leaving a band and then going out on their own. Now, you and I have thought a lot about the magic of band dynamics. We did a book on the Beatles and the Stones, and one of the things we concluded made those bands so fantastic was the interaction of Richards and Jagger, McCartney and Harrison, and Lennon, right? Good players make each other better. Witness Sound Opinions, right? On the other hand, a lot of times an artist can't do everything he or she wants to do within a group setting. You have to always balance that group dynamic. So I think over the course of the last 40 or 50 years, we've had a lot of strong solo debuts. And then, you know, how many strong solo careers? How many careers that have sustained musical excellence as long or longer as the original band? I don't know. We were trying to think both in terms of longevity and creativity and really, you know, this career in a band was great, and then this career as a solo artist was great too.
Yeah, I think a good example of that is the artist I want to play here first, Jim. The Fugees were one of the biggest hip-hop groups of the 90s at the time this artist made her solo debut. The Fugees' second album, The Score, came out in 1996, and it sold 6 million copies. I mean, it was a huge group. Lauryn Hill was a member in that group. She went solo in 1998 with The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Well, that ended up topping everything the Fugees had done and turned Lauryn Hill into a superstar. I guess the only downside of this whole thing is that Lauryn Hill was never really able to sustain that. She only released one other record since then. She's been in all sorts of legal trouble. There have all been all sorts of personality and personal conflicts in her life. But I have to tell you, when I go back and listen to The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, I still hear a great record. There's a sense of a woman really coming into her own on this record. She wrote, arranged, and produced the entire thing. It's a personal record. It's a political record. It's a manifesto for a young woman of color coming up during this era. And I have to say that both my daughters came to this record later. They were too young at the time to fully appreciate it. But they both really, really loved this record for some of the things that Lauryn Hill is talking about. And there's a rawness there that evokes the more personal work of people like, I compared it when I reviewed it to some of those more personal records that Marvin Gaye was doing in the 70s or even Bob Marley. It made me people think I'm out of my mind. For my taste, there was no stronger record in the 90s for those sort of reference points than Lauryn Hill's The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Here's one of the singles from the record, Everything is Everything, from Lauryn Hill on Sound Opinions.
Yo, we about to set
Lauryn Hill with Everything is Everything, Greg Kot's first pick for a great solo album from someone who was in a good band before that. Greg, I'm going to talk about Peter Gabriel. I can't talk about Peter Gabriel enough. You know I love early Genesis, right? Up through The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. We talked about that as one of our rock operas, how much that record, you know, stands up. Like McCartney, Gabriel, during the midst of this tour for the biggest album Genesis had put out yet, the most ambitious, the one that really put him front and center, playing all these characters throughout the course of a double album, he puts out a press release and says, by the way, I'm leaving Genesis after this tour. Disappears for a year or two, and then begins a series of solo albums between 1977 and 1982 that I think are one of those four or five album stretches as good as anything you will find anywhere in rock. The first four albums are all called Peter Gabriel. Fans distinguish them by the cover art, the Hypnosis cover art. There's the Car album, the first one, the Scratch album, the Melt album, the Security album. He's taking the art rock ideas of Genesis and the ideas of storytelling in the lyrics, and he's doing some incredibly inventive things, bringing in African rhythms, bringing in all sorts of wonderful synth techniques, drawing on some really talented friends like Brian Eno and Robert Fripp. I'm going to play a great solo track from that first album, known as the Car album, in 1977. It's called Here Comes the Flood. Now, there are so many wonderful Gabriel tracks to choose. I've played a lot of them over the years. This one's on my mind. I don't know if you've been watching The Americans on TV.
No.
Great show about spies in the 80s, Russian spies living in America in the 1980s. And they had a phenomenal set piece that was the center of an episode recently, scored to this Gabriel track. Peter Gabriel, 1977, Here Comes the Flood on Sound Opinions.
When the night shows, the signals grow on radios. All the strange things, they come and go. There's early warnings, stranded starfish have no place to hide. Still waiting for the swollen Easter tide. There's no point in direction, we cannot even choose a side. I took the old track, the hollow shoulder across the waters. On the tall cliffs, they were getting older, sons and daughters. Jaded underworld was riding high. Waves of steel, of metal at the sky. And as the nails sunk in the cloud, the rain was warm and soaked the crowd.
Peter Gabriel, Here Comes the Flood, the first solo career I'm highlighting on this show, Greg. A lot of solo careers came out of Genesis. I'm a fan of Steve Hackett's guitar solo albums. Not so much anybody else, especially Phil Collins. Coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, more artists going it alone. And then we'll review the new release from alt-era survivors Modest Mouse.
And if we break before the dawn, they'll use up what we used to be.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And we are looking at strong solo careers that followed strong band careers. Greg, you know, obviously there are some huge names here. We mentioned one up top, Paul McCartney, really all of the Beatles. Michael Jackson, right? Started out with the Jackson 5. We tried to dig a little deeper. I tried to avoid Neil Young. I could have talked about Brian Eno, post-Roxy Music, Wires, Colin Newman. I love that solo career. We were trying to pick some stuff that we haven't talked about and that went a little deeper. What's your next solo pick?
Jim, I'm going to go with Jenny Lewis from the band Rilo Kiley. Her solo debut came out in 2006. Rabbit Fur Coat was the name of that record. It came out at a time when Rilo Kiley, the band out of Los Angeles that she formed in the 90s with her songwriting partner Blake Sennett, was really on the ascent. They had just signed to a major label. They'd come out with their biggest album so far. They were playing a prime spot at the Coachella Festival in 2005. And then she was approached, Jenny Lewis was approached by her friend Connor Oberst and said, hey, make a solo record for my label. And what she referenced and what I really love about this record, I think, is that she went back to a record from her childhood, a record that she and her mother used to listen to a lot while she was growing up in California. Laura Nyro's record with LaBelle, Gonna Take a Miracle, from 1971. It's one of my favorite records, and I think she channeled some of that country soul vibe, that intimate living room atmosphere. She recruited the Watson Twins to sing harmony vocals. She stripped down the arrangements, made some of her most personal music to that point, and here's a track from it, Rise Up With Fists, from Jenny Lewis on Sound Opinions.
What are you changing? Who do you think you're changing? You can't change things. We're all stuck in our ways. It's like trying to clean the ocean. What do you think you can drain it? Well, it was poison and dry long before you came. But you can wait.
That is Rise Up With Fists from Jenny Lewis's solo debut, Rabbit Fur Coat, 2006. Jim, what's one of your favorite solo records?
I'm going to talk, Greg, about Phil Manzanera. You know, I think our temptation initially was, when we were brainstorming each of us on our own, to name a bunch of bandleaders, singers, songwriters who went on to good solo careers. You know, that's not the only kind of solo career out there, right? Especially in the progressive rock world. I was talking about Peter Gabriel earlier. Lots of progressive rock musicians have gone on to lengthy solo careers full of albums of instrumental music, them showing their virtuosity. Phil Manzanera, guitarist of Roxy Music, I think is a different story. This guy's life fascinates me. He was born in London to an English dad and a Colombian mom, and he was raised all over the Americas, Venezuela, Colombia, Cuba, started playing acoustic guitar, Cuban folk songs, when he was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has brought a certain breadth of vision to all of his guitar solos and guitar sounds through the years. And he has gone on, outside of doing incredible work with Roxy Music, to play with artists as diverse as Steve Winwood and David Gilmour, John Cale, and Godley and Cream. That first solo album is really special, though. 1975, it's called Diamond Head. Everybody in Roxy Music, except for Brian Ferry, makes an appearance on it. That would include Brian Eno. I said I'd stay away from Eno. I'll stay away from Eno's own solo career. But he stopped by the studio and sang on this song called Big Day. And it's about, I don't really know what it's about. I think it's about dreaming you're on vacation in Peru. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful pop song. Phil Manzanera, Big Day, 1975 on Sound Opinions.
Taking our time. That I never came here.
That is Big Day from Phil Manzanera, a great solo recording by an artist in a very well-known group, Roxy Music, doing some really good stuff that probably didn't get the commercial highlight it should have gotten, but certainly speaks to what a great artist Phil Manzanera is and what he brought to Roxy Music as a guitar player.
Last invoked on this show by Nick Mason, talking about him mixing the final Pink Floyd record.
Yes, indeed. And speaking of great solo records and groups that created great solo artists, much like Roxy Music did, because Brian Ferry had a pretty fine solo career well out of Roxy Music, the Wu-Tang Clan in the 90s. You know, the debut record of the Wu-Tang Clan really was a landmark for East Coast hip-hop in the early 90s. And it was really not so much a group or a single MC that dominated that group. It was more like a collective. And I would say about a half dozen of the solo spin-off records from the Wu-Tang Clan we could have considered for this show as great examples of solo careers bouncing off of great groups. I mean, if you look at the solo debut by somebody like Genius or Method Man or Old Dirty Bastard even, you could have said, hey, those are really excellent examples of solo recordings. And Ghostface, I think, is my personal favorite. Ghostface Killah, as he was once known, has done at least two great solo recordings out of the Wu-Tang stable. Supreme Clientele in 2000, I think, was a marvelous solo recording, but my favorite is Fish Scale, which came out in 2006. I always loved Ghostface as an MC. I always thought of all the MCs in the Wu-Tang Clan, he had that mix of confidence, bravado, but also that skill. He would come at you hard. He had that booming voice, and it was just built to be rapping over these Dusty's beats, which he loved so much. He would use a lot of old-school soul samples. And on Fish Scale, he employed some great producers to give him those samples, Just Blaze, Pete Rock, J Dilla. But the work I really admire on this record in particular is the production by MF Doom, another great MC who did great production work on this record for Ghostface. The track I'm going to point to is kind of an anomaly in the Ghostface catalog because it's so weird. I mean, it's psychedelic, it's strange. It's got this Bobby Humphrey flute sample. You know, he manages to squeeze the Isley Brothers and SpongeBob SquarePants into the same line. I mean, two of my all-time favorites, right? It's this psychedelic vision compressed into a couple of minutes. It's Underwater from Ghostface on Sound Opinions.
Yo, and yo, I'm lost underwater. I see a pink door with a crystal handle, so I keep swimming, amazed that I'm not drowning. Butterflies took control when I arrived. I open the door, no, I knock first. I'm not on my turf, I seen a ray of lights that resemble live fireworks. Swim mermaids with Halle Berry haircuts, flashing their tail like follow me now. Don't be afraid, I'ma show you where all the gins and spirits pray. If you're scared to face this life, you should have stayed. So I kept on swimming, grabbed onto a fin to help me out. As we got close, I seen a boat all shot up with his anchor out. Then she asked me politely what I'm thinking about. I said nothing. She said nothing leaves nothing. If you feel me, I bet this'll bring that out. I seen rubies, diamonds, smothered under octopus, jellyfish, sharks, saw octopus, pocketbook, pearls on the mermaid girls, Gucci belts that they rock for no reason from a different world. Up ahead lies Noah's Ark, but that's waves away. You away to the right, that's one of our banging spots. She quoted, I took notice. SpongeBob in the Bentley coupe, banging the Isleys. He spoke, backed up, then he passed me suit. Seen his chick eyeing me hard, he got vexed and smacked his boot. Took off, continued my travels. Seen a rock from the Titanic looking fat, and that was the damage. Then I seen something real big, sky blue and gold with white walls, behind a large city that was lost before Christ walked the walk. Upon the waters is so bright, every time we got close the mermaid held on tight. All I heard was Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Bismillahi Adaman Rahim, Allah scream that we heard from afar. Everyone's saluted in the world's banging, his minds got crowded in with life that I can't explain. They said, sir, yes, I'm glad you came, greeted me with Qurans and Torahs.
Underwater by Ghostface Killah from the Fish Scale album. He'd previously been in the Wu-Tang Clan. You know, when we do these shows, Greg, we're each coming up with lists, and then we share them via email just so we don't repeat each other. I was so angry that you claimed that album first before I got to it. I just think, after this album, which is essentially about the culture of selling drugs, that's territory that is now so well covered, it never has to be covered again. It's a literary masterpiece about the drug life. I'm going in a different direction. I need to talk about Chaka Khan. I don't think we've talked about Chaka Khan on this show enough. And she is just an amazing woman, a great vocalist. Chicago born. Her big claim to fame early on was as a member of the funk band Rufus, where she was dubbed the Queen of Funk. That band lasted a couple of years for her, and then she went off on a solo career. It was kind of a slow build. You know, huge hit early on with the disco crossover, I'm Every Woman. But, you know, a deep, deep catalog. And I think one thing that testifies to a solo artist's success is the people who come in to work with them. I'm going to play a track from her sixth solo album, I Feel For You, the title track. This is a song that was originally written and recorded by Prince. It's also been covered by the Pointer Sisters, Mary Wells. Prince says, you know, Shaka owned it, all right? He's a huge Shaka Khan fan. Stevie Wonder stops by just to play harmonica, and Grandmaster Melly Mel does the raps, okay? When you got friends like that, you know you got something going on. It's all Shaka, though. You know, that voice is amazing. Her presence is amazing. I Feel For You, Shaka Khan from 1984 on Sound Opinions. Shaka Khan, a great solo track from 84, I Feel For You.
And we want to hear from the listeners too, Jim. What are the most successful solo efforts in rock history? Why do some work and others fall flat? We want you to comment on that or anything in the world of music at 888-859-1800. We're going to be back with our final picks and a review of the new album by Modest Mouse. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and we are talking about the best solo efforts from artists who were in already great bands, but made a name for themselves as solo acts afterward. What do you got next, Jim?
Greg, I'm probably going to earn the enmity of some listeners here, but I got to talk about Justin Timberlake.
Sure.
Just because, you know, in terms of how rich the solo career has been versus how lousy artistically, financially, commercially, fantastically successful the band career was. I mean, NSYNC was a horrible band. There was no defending NSYNC whatsoever. I couldn't wait for the boy band era to end. I didn't expect anything from Justin Timberlake. First solo album comes out. I was like, wow, there might be something going on here. Justified, 2002. And then with Future Sex Love Sounds in 2006, we really began to see the ambition of this solo career. Now, you and I reviewed that twofer in 2013, the 2020 experience. He released it as a two-parter. I think we both concluded he lost the plot a little bit. It would have been a better single album, a little bit of self-editing. But I am amazed at the ambition here, you know, in terms of trying to cover so many elements of R&B, soul, and underground dance music and bringing it into mainstream pop. The guy also just has this incredible charisma. I'm going to play the song Rock Your Body, all right, which is kind of a silly song from that first solo album in 2002. The guy just has, he has like Sinatra style in a post-Michael Jackson dance package. I'm a fan of Justin Timberlake. I will not take any guff from anybody who criticizes it. This is Justin Timberlake with Rock Your Body from 2002, the Justified album on Sound Opinions.
Don't be so quick to walk away.
Body by Justin Timberlake on Sound Opinions. Greg, I forgot to say, produced by Chad Hugo and Pharrell Williams, an early hit for Williams.
Yeah, an obscure production team, right? The Neptunes.
The Neptunes.
Nobody ever heard of them. They didn't make any big hits, I don't
think.
Nope,
now they rule the world.
Yeah, absolutely. My final artist, Jim, for our solo acts, done good, Morrissey. The Smiths made four albums in the 80s, the last in 1987. There are many, many stories about why they broke up. There are many stories about why they continue to stay broken up. They are one of the few bands, alas, from that era and earlier, who have not done the lucrative reunion tours. I've heard there's all sorts of money on the table for these guys to get back together again. Morrissey says it'll never happen. Johnny Marr, who's been on our show, the guitar player, his collaborator in the Smiths, also says it never will happen. But meanwhile, Morrissey has gone on to have a fairly successful solo career, one that especially in its early stages was even more successful than the Smiths were, especially in the United States. His solo debut came out only months after the Smiths announced that they were breaking up. It came out in 1988. It was called Viva Hate. You have to love the album title. And especially in light of some of the stories you hear about litigation over royalties within the Smiths, I think Morrissey was sending somewhat of a pointed message to his former bandmates when he titled it that, Viva Hate. His first solo album, nonetheless, had a lot going for it. He basically made it with the Smiths producer Stephen Street, and he brought in Vin Reilly as a musical collaborator. He got out of the box strong, made two outstanding singles that charted in the UK. The record eventually went gold in the United States, courted some controversy with a song called Margaret on the Guillotine, a poison letter to Margaret Thatcher that got him in some hot water. But what I gravitate towards is the great melodies that he was consistently coming up with. A lot of people thought he was leaning so much on Johnny Marr in the Smiths for his musical goods. Here he's basically proving to the world that I can do it on my own with a little help from my friends. Here's one of the great singles from that record, Suede Head, from Morrissey on Sound Opinions.
Why do you come here? And why do you hang around?
That is Suede Head from Morrissey, my final pick of a great solo career. We want to hear your contributions. Give us a call at 888-859-1800 for great solo albums. And you can also go to soundopinions.org to see the complete list from Jim DeRogatis and myself, as well as interviews with the Smiths, Johnny Marr, and producer Stephen Street.
Call a party.
listening to Sound Opinions, and that is a song called Lampshades on Fire by Modest Mouse from the new album Strangers to Ourselves. Greg, wasn't clear for a long time that we'd ever say those words, new Modest Mouse album. It's been 8 years since the last record, We Were Dead Before the Ship Even Sank. We were just talking about Johnny Marr. He toured with the band playing guitar. Isaac Brock formed the band originally when he was only 18 years old, living in a shed behind his mother's trailer home in the Pacific Northwest. The group starts out as one of those classic mid to late 90s indie success stories, putting out really strange records for small labels and touring in the van. Around about 2000, they get signed to Epic Records, and then they blow up huge in 2004 with the record Good News for People Who Love Bad News, especially the single Float On, which was ubiquitous, used in a million TV commercials all over what was then called modern rock radio, catapulting these guys to arena and festival headlining level. So it's been a long time. What's been going on? There were rumors for years that Isaac Brock was writing with Big Boy of Outkast. And just on the absurdity of that, I mean, Johnny Marr, you can sort of see as a collaborator on the previous album. What was he doing with Big Boy? I guess we'll never know because there's no evidence of Big Boy on this new record. What there are 15 new Modest Mouse songs. We're going to play one for you. We'll come back and we'll give our review. This is a tune called Coyotes by Modest Mouse from Strangers to Ourselves on Sound Opinions.
Coyotes tiptoeing snow after dark, at home with the ghosts in the national parks. Mankind's behaving like some serial killers, giant old monsters afraid of the sharks.
That is Coyotes from the new Modest Mouse album, Strangers to Ourselves. I actually kind of like that song, especially that little acoustic finger-picking up top. And there are a few things on this record that I think are pretty good. I love that more wistful, introspective side that we're seeing on a track like Strangers to Ourselves. You know, the cello in that track. There's a Caribbean feel to another one of the tracks, Ansel, that I really like. But I got to say, Jim, a lot of this record feels like, man, I've heard this Modest Mouse record before. You know, I point to a track like Lampshades on Fire. I swear, Isaac Brock could roll out of bed after being asleep for 15 years, and that song would be pouring out of him. It is almost a Modest Mouse cliche, that sort of jaunty, lopsided pirate song. There's a lot of those kind of songs.
He does
on this
love
record.
That sea shanty thing.
Yeah, and it gets old after a while. I think Pistol is one of the worst Modest Mouse songs ever. It's like a bad cartoon music.
I've got my pistol in the car, I've got my stereo in the car, I've got my rookie in the car, Why don't you come to my room and clean my pistol note up? I maximize my own liaisons. I'm gonna take it till the ticking comes on.
I feel, for a band that has been away as long as Modest Mouse has been, that we're entitled to expect something a little fresh, something a little energized, and we're not getting it. I feel like this band is treading water. It took 8 years to make this record because it didn't have anything new to say. I think it's a trash it.
I think you're being really cruel there. You said a bunch of nice things up top, and then you talked yourself into a bad review.
Well, there's two or three nice things, but it's 57 minutes, Jim. 15 tracks. That's a lot of mediocre music.
It's too long. I think Modest Mouse does one thing very, very well, Greg. I was not anticipating or looking forward to a new Modest Mouse album. This album caught me by surprise and reminded me of the things I liked about this group, going all the way back to the moon and Antarctica. We said they do the sea shanty thing, but they also do a sort of lilting, wistful, ethereal psychedelia that at the same time is absolutely killer effective in terms of pop hooks that deliver at the same time that you're floating off into space. You know, not for nothing was that song Float On so massive. I was glad to have a new set of tracks, 7 or 8, that are as good as Float On. I honestly think so. And you do have something new here. He is, for the first time, not just doing the Dada surrealist lyric thing. This is a concept album. You seem to have missed that, about man's disregard for nature. I chose the song Coyotes to play because it was inspired by a coyote that happened to hop onto public transit in Portland. And then the coyote is talking to we humans and saying, you know, you're really messing up my environment, man. You got to get your act. I love that. You're laughing right now. See, you just didn't listen close enough. It's a trash it for you. It's a buy it for me. What do we have on the show next week?
I'm shocked, Jim, but next week, Jim, we have a great show. We've got a rock fan's guide to jazz music.
As always, Greg, we have some thank yous to say on the way out. Sound Opinions is produced by Robin Lynn, Jason Saldana, Evan Chung, and our intern, Alex Claiborne.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
New messages.
Hi, this is Dale calling from St. Petersburg. I just recently watched a documentary called Greenwich Village Music That Defined a Generation, and they referred to the day the music died as the day in the early 60s that the authorities closed down the Park Square in the middle of Greenwich Village where the folk scene was happening. And there was a protest that eventually led them to them reopening it as a venue for musicians to play. And, by the way, Don McLean was active in that motion.
This is Kathy, formerly from California, now living in beautiful Waukegan. Regarding Don McLean's American Pie, I want to quote William Shatner on the Saturday Night Live episode where he tells the Star Trek fans to get a life. I feel the same about American Pie and also the song where they leave the cake out in the rain. It's like, get a life. Listen to it if you like, but get on with it. Thank you. Bye.
This is Peter in El Cerrito, California. Hi, Jim and Greg. I just wanted to say you guys gave me the biggest laugh I've had in probably 2015 just now, listening to your Sleater-Kinney show. In your music news, you kind of made a crack about Rush.
So to me, the great mystery, Jim, has always been who's the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost that are mentioned in the last verse. I mean, some people have said it's Janis Hendrix and Jim Morrison who died around that time. Popular theories that he's talking about Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and Big Bopper again, bringing the song full circle. I mean, who would you say it would be?
I think it's the members of Rush.
I like that one.
And then when you went to the music break, I thought, oh, that's cool. Now they're playing a Rush song. then I realized, holy crap, it was Slater Kinney. All these years that I've been listening to Slater Kinney, you know, with a certain amount of detachment, I couldn't figure out why. It's because I always confuse them with Rush because of Corinne Tucker's vocals. She sounds just like Geddy Lee. So funny.
Messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.